I'm Eric Warista, and welcome to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam Shore and I are excited to bring you this new podcast, giving you content direct from the point of view of two long-tenured season ticket holders. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the show, and we can't wait to hear from you. I'm Eric Warista.
And this is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Those of you who listened to our show before know that we typically break down recent games, but the last three games against New York, Houston, and Montreal have really been like one long, painful game. It's all been the same game, the same things have been happening. So we're going to spend more time, I think, Noam, if it's okay with you, talking about where things stand. So where do we stand?
That's a good question. You know, a few episodes ago, we had an episode titled Better Living Through Chemistry. And at that time, there were some signs of a spark from the Revolution, and there was some energy around the team. And just when you thought that the Revs had a chance, that they could pull something out, define their new identity, they fall into an abyss that no one could have imagined. From the best team in regular season history to one win in the last eight games. What's happening, Eric?
I think for me, the biggest change from a fan perspective was that we felt like we were already eliminated after the Houston game, after the loss against the last place team in the Western Conference. And going to the game, everyone we talked to, everywhere, everything we read, everything we heard, you know, what Carlos Heel said, you know, I don't think we're a playoff team right now. I think everyone said, yeah, that's right. That was really different because Revs teams in the past always felt like there was that little sense of optimism. Well, maybe they'll sneak in. And I think it was 2019 when Bruce first took over, when they almost made the playoffs and played so well towards the end of the regular season. And then 2020, they carried a lot of momentum down the stretch run into the playoffs. And then last year, when you just, you could almost be nonchalant about it because there was this feeling that the Revs were just going to pull it out somehow, even in the desperation of the Eastern Conference Final where they lost to New York. You felt like, well, they'll just find a way, and they almost did.
Yeah, and it's this time around. It's not that the Revs are even in these games. Like you said, they look uninspired, disconnected. All the players, aside from Petrovic, I would argue are playing like a shell of themselves and even making mind-boggling mistakes. 12 penalty kicks in the second half of the season. Arena even pointed that out. There's really something missing.
I think you bring up a good point about the chemistry is just not there. I mean, there's something very wrong with the team dynamic. And we would go to games last year and talk about how much fun the team was to watch, not just because they were winning, but they seemed to play this very selfless style. They moved the ball quickly. Everyone hustled back when they lost the ball. There was a sense like, oh, I lost the ball. Keeping the ball is very important to how we play. It's my responsibility to help make sure we get it back and control the game. And what we saw, not just yesterday, but also in Houston and also against New York, is guys make a bad pass or there's a bad bounce or the call goes against them. Heads go down, arms go up.
Even the Montreal game yesterday, there was a play where the ball apparently bounced off a Montreal player on the ground. Barrera thought it was a handball. The team kind of stopped, and meanwhile, Montreal played the whistle and went on the counter and scored the winning goal.
You know, the announced crowd, I think, was 35,400 and change. And it didn't feel like that, you know, just where we were. There were lots of empty seats. I feel like there were a lot of season ticket holders who, because of the way the results have been going, stayed away.
It was certainly a quiet crowd, but of course there wasn't that much to cheer about. But otherwise, the Revolution didn't have a whole lot to show for the crowd there. That was also disappointing. In fact, that's another topic we've talked about going back over the years. Have the Revs ever won a big-time game at Gillette Stadium with a large crowd? And you can go back. So this game, the NYCFC game in the playoffs last year, lost that one. If I go back to, was it 2014? Was it that far back when they made their playoff run to the MLS Championship? And there was a big crowd on.
I think so. The lead win, Jermaine Jones team.
Right. And in that game, so that was the second leg of the Red Bulls series. There was a big crowd. And that game, they tied. I mean, they did go through, and that was their ticket to the championship game. You think about other games where a lot of people were there, LA Galaxy, games like that in seasons past. I feel like whenever there was a big crowd, something just doesn't go well. And it's unfortunate because they had 35,000 people there with a chance still to get in to the playoffs. And it was just like you said, like the other two games, it was just a continuation of the same thing.
This is going to be a good project for one of the stat heads here to look at the correlation between the Revs winning percentage and the crowd size and just see how it varies. It feels as a fan like they're inversely correlated. When the more people that are there, the worse the Revs play.
Well, I think we have such a long off season coming up this year that we'll have time to do that statistical analysis. I think that's a good idea.
Anyway, so we try pretty hard to be positive on this show, and that's our ethos. That's our kind of our North Star. But sometimes you have to be realistic. You know, it was interesting walking around the parking lot before the game. We talked to a lot of fans who started to put the word out publicly, really for the first time here. Just tried to hear what people had to say and what stood out to you.
Well, first of all, it was the most fun I had in the evening was talking to people. I usually don't make the effort to talk to people that I haven't talked to before or don't know. So it was really fun to feel connected to the soccer community and the Revs fans and other season ticket holders and pay more attention to the awesome tailgate setups that people have. Always impressive to see that when you start to pay attention to the cooking styles and cuisines and music and everything. But there was, I'd say, you know, a fair amount of cynicism about this team. Like, there wasn't a lot to be happy about. Everyone has on their jerseys, you know, credit to the diehard fans coming game after game. But it wasn't, I would say, the most energetic crowd, as you pointed out.
Yeah, I mean, people were having a good time, I think. But I felt like the, you know, some of the fans were just, you could sense the disappointment in the season, really. More than anything else. And the team isn't very good right now, and it hasn't looked right since the loss to Pumas in Mexico City. It stretches all the way back to that, I think. There have been little moments when they've been better and little moments when they've been worse, but since then, there hasn't been a sustained period where they really got the results they needed.
Yeah, there was a couple gut punch games then. There was the Pumas game, obviously. That was a big one because the Revs really had a team to build on to try and do something in the Champions League, and they had Buxa still at that time. Then there was also the Real Salt Lake game, which was also in the snow, where the Revs coughed up, I think, a 2-0 lead. And did they lose the game or was it a tie? It was a pretty tough one. Oh, it's thundering now. Great. I'll add that Arena had an interesting quote yesterday where he said that the team played above their level last year, but didn't internalize exactly what they did in order to apply it this year. That's not exactly his words, but pretty close, I think, in what he was basically implying.
I have his exact quote right here, so I'll just read it. So last year we played well over our heads, and some of our players never understood what made them successful last year.
Right. And clearly they have not been able to recreate the magic, so maybe Arena is right to some degree. But I think it's an odd statement to make. It undercuts the team, first of all, in terms of the skill sets that people have. He's basically saying, you're not that good. Congratulations on a great year last year. You played your hearts out. But on average...
Interesting. So that's I took it slightly differently. I took it more as, I've been telling you to do this, X, whatever X is. you guys haven't been doing it because you don't understand that that's why we won last year and that's why we're not winning this year. And you're not listening to me. I think it's interesting because there's been some questions and noise, fairly or not, of whether he's lost the team or lost the locker room. But that's, to me, that's almost him saying he has.
Right. So I think that's also part of what makes the statement odd to me in the sense that if Arena is able to pinpoint this dynamic of what's going on, is it that difficult to communicate to the players what needs to be done on the field? So is he then blaming the team not only for not exceeding what they can do, but also not listening? That seems to be what you're saying, right?
Yeah, I'm saying he's in a way admitting that he's not able to get through to them.
He did also say that some of the players, or a lot of them, are playing their hearts out. But then the Revs seem to lose their focus and their energy, their positiveness, and some of the calls start to go against them, and the giveaways, like that was a big factor yesterday and I think has been the last three games. And you have more of that sort of head hanging and frustration with teammates and frustration on the field. And all of a sudden what started off as a promising start just kind of dissipates. And where last year they would play through to the final whistle. And I've commented before how Heal always seems to play right to the end. Like he seems to have energy, whether it's the first minute or the 95th minute with extra time, he's always playing at the same speed. But the team is just not following that path this year.
For me, this is a different kind of season that the Revs hadn't really had before. So in the past, they were either good and they played well, or they were bad and didn't play well. This is a team that has a lot of talent, that lost a lot of talent because players were sold who would have left anyway because there was demand for them and they could make more money and play on bigger teams or play in bigger leagues. And in past instances of this, it felt like the Revs didn't do much to try to replace players who left. But this year they did. They tried. I mean, the one thing you can't say is the front office didn't try. Because by my count, they brought in 9 new players. I had Petrovic, Altidore, Gonzalez, Leggett, Barrero, Veroni, De La Garza, McCoon, and Tahori Shradi.
Right.
The problem is most of those players either had no impact or were too injured to play much. So, and two of them are gone, either on loan or have been transferred away. But the one spectacular success is Jordy Petrovic, who's been awesome, who might be the goalkeeper of the year, despite playing for a team that's been sinking in the standings.
He plays the same way the whole game, kind of like Carlos Heal does. Like he had a 4-save sequence in Houston that was just stunning. And against Montreal last night, he had a save. He had a save at the end of the game that was quite impressive. So the issue of chemistry, and we brought it up before, is also for me on the management team. So again, to the Revs leadership to call out the players for playing above level last year and not bringing it this year. But that's something that management can also try and steer in the right direction in terms of chemistry. And there was that spark. Like we put it in our podcast a few episodes ago.
Well, the injuries just killed these guys this year. I mean, you know, Bo has hardly been out there. You know, the new guys, Barrero and Veroni, haven't been out there. Tahori Shradi hasn't even, I don't even know if he's practicing. I mean, we haven't even seen him on a game day lineup, I don't think.
Right, so they never had a chance.
Well, yeah, I mean, Kessler missed a lot of time early in the season. Then he missed some time late in the season for a different reason.
Bell missed time. Jones was hurt yesterday.
Polster missed time.
It does make it even more painful considering that they're going into a 2-week break now for international play. And if they had just won a few of those games over the course of the season, they would be at least in the playoff zone and would have time to have healed, get some players back like Barrero and Veroni. But to have, again, just one win in the last eight games, it's just, it's really difficult to fathom. In the end, Eric, the shirt stands alone. The one constant, what's left at the end of this wreckage, is that big blow-up shirt at the end of Gillette Stadium.
Yeah, that huge inflatable shirt that has no shape to it, no structure, no sense of strength, no sense of much of anything other than maybe a used car dealership. And that may be an insult to used car dealers. But improbably, with two games left, the Revs are somehow not mathematically eliminated, although
it would be a miracle.
They host Atlanta on October 1st after the 2-week break. Then they go on the road to Chicago. And also their next game is against Atlanta, which brings up an uncomfortable 5-year anniversary, which is we're approaching the 5-year anniversary of the 7-0 loss in Atlanta, after which Jay Heaps was let go as head coach. Things aren't quite as dire this year, as disappointing as the season is, as it has been. I don't think we're in quite that bad a shape, but it's really hard to be optimistic about these next two games.
Well, let's hope they go better. I've heard Revs players talking about playing for pride, playing to show that they can win, that they can play well, playing for their contracts. So I think there'll be some energy still with them.
Did they make comments like that, like about playing for pride? I mean, they are still in the race.
It wasn't exactly those words, but basically saying they want to go out winners, at least winning games. Who wants to lose constantly, right? And they've been losing recently. So there's a lot of pressure to win, which is great.
Right, but my point was, usually you hear about guys playing for pride when they're mathematically eliminated. Because then literally pride and maybe your next contract, maybe a transfer somewhere else, is all there is to play right for. That's just another sign that like they've thrown in the towel and closed the book on the season.
Realistically, there's 3 or 4 teams ahead of them to even get the last playoff spot. 2 games left, and other teams have games in hand. So I think they realize that it's pretty much over. And I mean, to be realistic too, they're 9-12 and 11 or something like that. They're a below 500 team. Carlos Hill said himself that they don't deserve to be in the playoffs.
He could do something about that, though. I mean, that's my point. Like, they're playing a team that's 2 points ahead of them, another chaser, Atlanta, and then they play Chicago. So they're playing. It's far fetched, but maybe I'll end on a note of optimism here. Just that it's as far fetched as it would be. It's odd to hear. It's one thing for the negativity to come from the fans. It's another thing when the coach and the players are basically telling you, yeah, we're not mathematically eliminated, but like, don't expect anything. It's just a very, very, very bizarre situation.
I like the honesty, to be honest, though.
In a way, it's refreshing. The coach and the players are telling you, we don't know what to do, and we don't think we're going to figure it out in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and they're not trying to sugarcoat a situation that is pretty frustrating for the almost 36,000 people that came yesterday.
You know, speaking of honesty, I feel like a little bit of a sense of loss here as we come to the end of the season with Brad Feldman and Charlie Davies coming to the end of their very good run, I thought, as announcers for Revolution's local TV games. I felt like Brad Feldman and especially Charlie Davies, especially in the last year and a half or so, really tell you what they're thinking and admit when they're wrong, but not afraid to call out referees, players, coaches on both sides. So it's been fun. Feldman's been here forever. He's just been the voice of the Revs. It's been so good.
Yeah, having watched games for such a long time, you expect to hear Brad Feldman's voice. Supporting cast, most recently Charlie Davies, did a wonderful job. And I think it is a big loss, and I think it's a loss for sports teams in general, too, not to have local broadcasting teams that are more connected to the team on a daily basis, the area, can talk about the history a little bit. It's not just two people stepping in to call a game. And you just had that connection with Brad Feldman and Charlie Davies. And I think it's quite disappointing for me to be losing them in the broadcast booth next year.
Yeah, I think so too. And you mentioned something at the game, which I thought was really true, which is especially here in Boston, local announcers have such a connection to the team and to the fans. You know, we see it, you know, we saw it with Jerry Remy with the Red Sox for a long time, but even, you know, Eckersley has been so good on Red Sox broadcasts that even if you don't watch a lot of baseball, you know, just to sit down and listen to him do a couple innings of the game is worthwhile and entertaining. You know, certainly Tommy Heinsohn and Mike Gorman with the Celtics, and you know, you could just go on and on. You like pick your team and pick your city, frankly, because it's a common thing across the country. Vin Scully passed away this year. You know what he means to the Dodgers and, and to the sport of baseball. And I felt like Brad was kind of building to that because, you know, the first 20 years are the hardest, right? So, and or I was here 20 years. How long was he doing Rose games?
I mean, I remember him back to the early 2000s, I think. Yeah. I remember meeting Brad Feldman at an event at Babson when I was still at school there. So that was early 2000s. So he was already an established broadcaster for the Revs at that time.
So we just wanted to take a moment and say thank you to Charlie Davies and also to Brad Feldman just for their awesome work over the last several years and making Revs games entertaining and honest and interesting, and they'll be missed.
Well, we hope to see them as part of the MLS team overall with Apple TV, but hopefully Apple TV will take a note of this podcast and the success of local broadcast teams in history over time. Like you said, at any sport, any team has a history of broadcasters that people will remember as part of that experience.
As for us, we'll have a couple more podcasts this season. Please listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. If it's on Apple Podcast, please leave a review.
Follow us on Twitter at The Last Team on Turf. Thanks for listening and appreciate your time investing into the podcast. We welcome your feedback directly as well through DM on Twitter and hope to see you in the Gillette Stadium parking lot again soon.
We thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warrested and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warrested and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warrested. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution.